And it's primarily a music format, isn't it?
It's mostly music, yeah.
Because I know that at a lot of community radio stations, there's often a lot of tension about the music versus having more news or public affairs programming, and I guess that's not really an issue for FMU then.
Yeah, I think that's also a byproduct of the fact that we're broadcasting in the New York City area, and there's so many news outlets. Even if you discounted what's happened on the internet and with cable television, even before that, there were 6 or 7 full-time news stations, just radio stations, in the New York area, which is why when I became station manager in 1985, I was happy that there was very little news, or actually no news, no straight news, on the station, because it just seemed like we were already saturated with so many full-time news stations. And news is such a difficult and expensive type of programming to do.
And you raise funds similar to a lot of nonprofit stations, right? You run pledge drives and you do fundraisers that primarily aimed at your listeners, correct?
Yeah, we try to only interrupt our programming once a year, though. That's the difference between us and most other community and public radio stations, is that rather than having 2 or 3 or 4 on-air fundraisers a year, we only do it one time a year, and we're really committed to keeping it to just one time a year.
How do you decide at FMU what gets on the air? What is your structure for doing that?
We have a program director, and it's pretty much his decision who gets a show. But once people do get shows, the shows are completely in their hands. And if somebody wants to change their show from one style of music to a different style of music, or if they even want to start off doing a music show and then it turns into a talk show, they're free to do that. Although the program director changes the schedule twice a year. But it's his decision and his decision alone who gets a program. We used to do it by committee, and it didn't work out very well doing it by committee. I found that making programming decisions by committee was having an anti-creative effect. It was kind of ensuring that the only people who got through the committee were people who didn't rub anybody the wrong way. And the committee structure was tending to discourage innovation, because anybody who came along with a really crazy idea, or anybody who was taking a programming approach that was really different than anything that we had ever tried, was controversial. And the committee structure did not favor controversy. It favored the status quo. So I was really unhappy with it. So I changed it to being just straight down managerial, one program director, and it's the program director's decision, and that's that.
And one thing you mentioned is that the schedule gets changed twice a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unusual. I mean, when you say change twice a year, is that like a wholesale change, totally mixed up?
No, it sometimes can seem that way, I guess. We try to do it more gradually, but we have a short 4-month summer schedule and then an 8-month fall and winter schedule. And it's not a gigantic change each time, although it can vary. Sometimes the new schedule can come along and it can be a very, very minor change with only maybe 5 or 10 programs changing at all. And other times it can be really a pretty big upheaval.
And so what's the motivation for doing that twice a year? I mean, I would say most community stations tend to have a schedule that gets locked in for a year or 10.
Yeah. Well, I think it was an outgrowth of the fact that we started off as a student station. And when we were a student station, we actually changed the programming 3 times a year to coincide with the 3 semesters
right
at the college. And then as we gradually had fewer and fewer students on the air, we changed it so we only did it twice a year. It just seemed like a good idea to keep changing the schedule a couple of times a year to give new programs a chance, to try to get people who had been doing the overnights onto a better slot, to just keep the programming fresh and changing and that kind of thing. And consciously to avoid the logjam that you tend to get at a lot of community radio stations, where, as you say, they come up with a schedule and it just gets locked in and just stays like that year after year after year. And I definitely wanted to avoid that at FMU. And it hasn't been easy, but somehow we managed to do it, and it remains a difficult process. And we also have something that we call enforced sabbaticals, which means that for no reason related to the quality of your programming or related to the quality of you as a staff member, if you've been on the air for a while and you have not sat out a schedule, you may be forced off the schedule simply to allow for new people to have a shot.
Wow.
And we call this enforced sabbaticals. And when I started doing that, it was really, people thought I was insane, and it was really controversial. But over time, people have seen that longtime staff members have to sit out a schedule, and then they get back on. And it's happened enough times now that people don't get as freaked out about it as they did. But that's been a really important tool for my program director to have at his disposal to try new ideas and to try to get new programs on the air, and also to make sure that the people who are doing the less desirable slots just don't get stuck there forever.
Right, right. And so the programmers mostly take to it, mostly respect those policies?
Most of the time they do, but there's nothing you can do about the fact that when somebody is forced off the schedule against their desires, that their feelings are going to be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And some people deal with that okay, and some people don't deal with it that okay.
And
it's not as bad as it used to be, though, because so many people, it's happened to so many people, and then they've come back.
And so do you get any reactions from listeners when the schedule gets shaken up and maybe someone's favorite show takes a sabbatical?
Yeah, and that can be bad too. But fortunately, the same kind of chemistry works among the listenership, that enough listeners have seen this happen for so many years now that in the online community, you know, on the FMU message board, for example, when a program gets taken off, invariably there will be some listeners who've never heard of this type of thing happening before, and they go on the message board and they're all upset and angry. And then other listeners who've seen this happen dozens of times before, and then they've seen their favorite program come back the next schedule, you know, they can calm them down.
Hmm.
And they can do a better job of calming down upset listeners than I can do or my program director can do.
Yeah, I've done programming here in Illinois, but I'm from Jersey, and I'm not sure I want 100 angry Jerseyans coming after me.
It can still be very bad. It can still be very bad, and you know, I'm not going to pretend that it's a smooth process every single time it happens. But on the other hand, I think we're the only community station I know of that does this. And other community stations have asked me about this policy, and I've even gone to staff meetings at other community radio stations where as upset as they are about the fact that their program schedule just gets completely locked in and it can never be changed, and you really reach a point of terminal gridlock on the program schedule, they would never want to do what we're doing here. It just sounds like a totally insane idea to force people off a schedule against their will. It was really difficult to get that policy going at FMU, and I had to endure several years of just, you know, rampant paranoia and hatred, you know, before I proved to people that I wasn't just trying to clean house, that I really was just trying to loosen things up a bit, you know, and it took a couple of years of forcing people off, and then the next time they got back on, and then they stayed on for another 5 or 10 years. You know, it took a couple of years before people saw what was happening and they realized that I wasn't just trying to get rid of certain people.
I think that's really cool. I mean, I've suggested similar things in the past, and it's hard. And of course, we run by committee, so you've got to convince more than one person of that sort of thing.
I mean, it could never work. Doing that could never work by committee either.
I think it could. I mean, it really depends on the culture of the station. We're lucky here at my station just because we're in a college town, and we have a lot of natural turnover anyway, so a lot of people stick around.
Right. That's important. At a student station or even a community station in a college town, you have natural attrition, and that's what we lost. We lost any form of natural attrition, you know, and that's why we had to start doing this. I mean, especially once there were no students on the air anymore, there was no mechanism for any kind of movement or flexibility in the schedule at all.
Yeah, and there are definitely times when you know, I think people, I mean, I agree, I think people need to take a vacation because sometimes you just get into a rut with your show. And no matter how good your show was when it started, it may not be, it just may be old and boring, you know, 7 years later.
Yeah, people definitely get into a rut. And you don't even hear the station the same way if you're not on the air. I mean, when you're doing a show, you have a different relationship with the station than when you don't. That's what I found. That when I've taken myself off the schedule several times just because I wanted a break. And I find that when I'm not on the schedule, the station itself sounds fresher and better to me simply because I'm not aware of everything in the record library anymore. It's like, when I'm on the air doing a show and I hear somebody play a record and I know that that record just arrived at the station and I know it's just sitting right there in the new bin, I think, oh, they're just playing that out of the new bin. But when I'm not doing a show, I don't know what's in the new bin anymore, so my experience is more like that of your typical listener. And the station sounds better to me, and it really opened my eyes when I took myself off the schedule.
That's right. That's right. Do you have a lot of new staff come into the station? Do you do regular training and such?
Yeah, we probably don't do enough regular training. Mm-hmm. That's actually one of our problems, is that there's so many new technologies at the station all the time, and we have. You know, we have some staff members who are technically really curious and adept, and then other people who are scared of it. And we just don't offer enough training, probably, to teach people what the potential is of DJing with MP3s as opposed to DJing with records, or doing a podcast, or doing one of these web-only shows. And so we have a digital divide problem here on the staff, just like there is in the culture at large.